and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, it's Monday, August 20th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to help end senseless marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. There is no social problem that we can solve as easily as ending marijuana prohibition that will really contribute to the overall safety, security, and economic benefit of this country. So make sure you join Normal today. Help us end prohibition. Just visit norml.org. We have a great show for you here today. A couple hundred thousand of our like-minded friends gathered at Myrtle Edwards Park up at Seattle's Hemp Fest this weekend, and it was a great weekend. We have call-in interviews with Alan St. Pierre and Keith Strupp today. Later in the week, we're going to have exclusive audio from Hemp Fest. The keynote speaker this year was PBS travel host and Normal Advisory Board member Rick Steves. Rick's appeared here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash three times. The most recent interview he gave here was just this July. In fact, right at the beginning of July last month. So we're going to replay a little bit of Rick Steves' interview for you here today after we hear our call-ins from Alan and Keith. Also in New Mexico, there's some very important news. New Mexico's Governor Bill Richardson continues a very public fight to get his state's medical marijuana program online by October 1st. Let's get to that news story right now. Our news today. Presidential candidate and New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson continues personal fight for medical marijuana access, writes President Bush. New Mexico's Governor Bill Richardson has written an open letter to President Bush asking for an exemption to federal law for state-authorized medical marijuana programs. Earlier this year, New Mexico became the 12th state to authorize the use of medical marijuana when the legislature there approved a program to allow seriously ill individuals access to the plant. Sponsored by the Drug Policy Alliance of New Mexico, the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act was spearheaded by the local DPA director, Rena Sapansky. The bill had fallen short of approval for several years until Governor Bill Richardson personally intervened last spring. Advocates and opponents gave Richardson's involvement the credit for getting the program approved. Under the law, there are just a handful of medical conditions that allow an individual to qualify, including HIV/AIDS, multiple sclerosis, and cancer. Last month, the New Mexico Department of Health began accepting applications from citizens who are seeking access. About 60 applications have been submitted and about 30 have been approved. There is a 30-day period between application and notice of approval or denial to the patients. Part of the new law and something unique to New Mexico's medical marijuana program is that the State Department of Health, or DOH, was to oversee the production and distribution of the medicine to the authorized patients. Cultivators and direct distribution were to be licensed by the DOH under rules that have yet to be promulgated. This system of production and distribution was well understood by legislators before the bill was passed. But recently, New Mexico's Attorney General Gary King issued a letter to Richardson's office stating that State Department of Health employees engaged in such a system could be open to federal prosecution. King cited cases where individuals have been arrested and prosecuted by the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration for growing medical marijuana in other states that allow it under their state law. The DEA and the Office of National Drug Control Policy, or ONDCP, spokespeople have been vague in their intent towards New Mexico's state agencies implementing the law. But the ONDCP said that they consider anyone involved with medical marijuana programs to be drug traffickers and susceptible to their attention. On Friday, Governor Richardson, also a Democratic presidential candidate, stood behind the New Mexico program and directed the New Mexico Department of Health to continue to move forward with full implementation of medical marijuana access. A press release issued by Richardson's presidential campaign stated, quote, Governor Richardson also directed the State Department of Health to continue planning to fully implement the law, including designing a program to provide eligible patients with access to medical marijuana. The governor said he wants the health department to be prepared to start a program once legal hurdles imposed by the federal government are cleared. Close quote. Richardson then went further and took the rare step of issuing a letter directly to President Bush. The full text of the letter is available on Richardson's campaign website, and we have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. It is so rare for a sitting governor to issue such a strong statement in support of medical marijuana access that we're going to read Richardson's letter in its entirety now. Quote, letter to President Bush as follows, August 17, 2007. The Honorable George W. Bush, President of the United States, the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C. Dear Mr. President, I am writing to raise my deep concern about the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy's misguided priority and wasted resources spent to intimidate states from trying to implement medical marijuana programs that provide relief to citizens suffering from pain or severe illness or injury. At a time when the scourge of meth is coming across the border and cocaine and heroin use continues to ravage our communities, the federal government should be cracking down on real criminals, not people who are trying to help those in pain. New Mexico, like 11 other states, passed a medical marijuana law to allow board-certified physicians to review and certify patients who are eligible for medical marijuana to relieve the pain of patients suffering from debilitating conditions. Our Department of Health is now impaired in its ability to fully comply with the new state law for fear of federal prosecution. That law calls on controls on the provision of medical marijuana to help protect the health of our citizens and not force patients to seek a remedy from potentially criminal elements. The population that seeks this remedy is small, and the program is strictly regulated. So far, only 60 patients have applied for state ID cards, and the Department of Health has approved just 30. I've listened to the personal and heartbreaking stories of this small group of people who suffer greatly each day. And like my Republican and Democratic colleagues in the legislature, I was moved to act. Mr. President, you still have an opportunity to leave a legacy of compassion by adding an exemption in federal law for states that enact medical marijuana and be an ally instead of an adversary in assisting critically ill people. Respected physicians and government officials should not fear going to jail for acting compassionately and caring for our most vulnerable citizens. Nor should those most vulnerable of citizens fear their government because they take the medicine they need. Sincerely, Bill Richardson, Governor, State of New Mexico. Close quote. The New Mexico Medical Marijuana Program is due to start in full on October 1st. More information about this story can be found at the Drug Policy Alliance of New Mexico. We have links to them at normalaudiostash.com.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Next up today, we've got some call-in interviews from the largest marijuana law reform rally in the country, Seattle's Hempfest, which took place this weekend at Myrtle Edwards Park. right there in downtown Seattle. Last week, we spoke with Radical Russ Belleville from Portland, Oregon, who is going to be speaking on stage there. We also got a chance to check in with Vivian McPeak, the director of HempFest. Later on this week, right here on the Audio Stash, we're going to have exclusive audio from HempFest sent in from a number of video and audio producers up there for play on the podcast. So stay tuned for all that audio later in the week. But let's get to our call-ins right now. Alan St. Pierre joined us by phone Sunday from the grounds of Myrtle Edwards Park and the surroundings of tens of thousands of reform-minded Americans there at HempFest. Alan, great to speak with you today. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Alan. How is everything there at HempFest today?
It is an amazing scene here in Seattle, Chris. There's probably 50 to 80,000 people in front of me in front of the main stage. This park is over a mile long, and it is full of Americans who want marijuana prohibition to end, and they are flying their colors very high.
Right on. It sounds like there was good weather and another great turnout for HempFest this year.
There was. Yesterday was spectacular by Seattle standards. Today we all came out to rain, but there is an amazing breaking of the clouds all around us. The sky is amazing with clouds, and you can see Mount Rainier and the Cascades, and it's truly one of the most amazingly beautiful cities in the United States, let alone to have so many marijuana law reform activists out here.
And how was Rick Steves, PBS travel host and normal advisory board member, how was Rick received by the crowd?
Oh, Rick's been having a great time. In fact, I just saw him give a secondary speech on one of the four stages here. This is such a huge event. They have four stages. And so he was just speaking on one of them, which is called the Hemposium, which was about 500 people under a big, beautiful tent and an espresso bar. And he just gave a wonderful lecture. But yesterday, when he was up on the main stage at 4:20, he brought the crowd down. He was terrific.
Alan, I know Normal has a really strong presence there over the weekend. I know there's a number of Normal chapters, and there are a number of Normal Board of Directors members up there with you and Keith.
Oh, absolutely. Normal's well-received here. We must have 7 or 8 chapters here with booths. Our banners fly everywhere. Everybody's walking around with Normal's pins and buttons and shirts, and so it's never hard to get away from the Normal brand if there's a big marijuana festival. And so the board of directors that have accompanied me here, which, oh, 5 to 6 of them, have all had a great time and been really informative. We've set up a booth here just to take questions on legal matters, on advocacy, on medical questions, and so we're doing a great educational outreach as well as getting out to the people in a fun and exciting way.
And Alan, what kinds of questions do you get from people when they find out that you are the executive director of Normal?
Well, the supercilious questions are, do I get my marijuana for free? how did I get my job? Can they get it? and lastly, you know, they want to know like something like, you know, did I have to fail a drug test to get my job interview? I mean, those would be sort of the standard questions, but the more serious ones are, you know, what can they do? How can they get involved? And, you know, more often than not, they tell of a problem associated with prohibition. They failed a drug test. They got arrested, and the government now is taking away their, you know, driver's license, and they now can't work. And so they want to know, how do they change these laws? How do they make marijuana laws look like alcohol laws?
I know there's a lot of folks up there who travel to Seattle just for HempFest. You're probably running into folks from all over the country right now.
Oh, this is amazing. I've run into people. I was in London about, 2 months ago, and a gentleman stuck his hand out, and he'd see me giving a lecture in London. He said he came all the way here based on my plug from the stage in London that if he wanted to see the biggest and best marijuana festival in the world, he should come to Seattle. Well, he said that because of the exchange rate in England right now, it's so cheap to come to the United States. He came, and he said, I was absolutely right.
Right on. Right on, Alan. And do a lot of people join Normal right at the event?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's kind of funny. Even though the Internet's been viable for 10 years commercially and many people join every day online and people call our 800 number in Washington, D.C., but when they can walk up to the booth and say hello and take a look at the shirts and materials we have right there or the Rick Steves hemp bag, they say, hey, sign me up right now.
Now, I know the authorities and the police department have worked very well with HempFest. How do things seem to be flowing in and out of the park today?
Oh, it's amazing. They've done a great job of getting people in and out of the park. As far as I know, as last night, there was no arrest despite, frankly, open marijuana smoking and at least 200 booths selling some of the most amazing glass paraphernalia I've ever seen. So the police, per usual, in this town, in the city of Seattle, are following the law here. And many years ago, four or five, the citizens voted for I-75, making marijuana the lowest priority for arrest. So as far as the police concern here, everybody here is breaking laws equivalent to ripping the tag off their mattress or spitting on the sidewalk. They just are not going to interfere with people's freedoms.
Alan, there were a number of Seattle City Councilors speaking there at HempFest last year. Have some of those local elected officials also attended this year?
Yes, there's been a number of people. State senators have spoken, and one of the gentlemen who last year who spoke as a city councilman has just about to retire, but he's speaking now as the front runner for mayor of this town. And he got up there and let this audience know, if you want to talk to a serious politician about changing the laws, elect him, and Seattle might be even more progressive than it already is.
Right on, Alan. Well, it sounds like it's a wonderful time there at the largest marijuana law reform rally in the world.
Well, thanks, Chris. It's a great time. We hope you can join us live some year out here.
Well, I am definitely looking forward to that, Alan. It really was a blast to be at Austin last week, and I'm looking forward to being at Seattle's HempFest next year for sure. Many thanks again for calling in here today from HempFest, Alan.
Take care.
Alan St. Pierre, Normal's executive director, on the ground at HempFest yesterday on Sunday as tens of thousands of our reform-minded Americans joined him in the park. And joining us also by phone yesterday was Normal's founder and legal counsel, Keith Strupp. We caught up with Keith just before he spoke at one of the five stages at HempFest. Keith, thanks for calling in today.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you, Chris.
Great to speak with you today, Keith. How has your experience been at HempFest this weekend?
Oh, it's fabulous. I discovered, you know, maybe 10 years ago that this really was the most empowering event of the year in this country, at least in terms of legalizing marijuana. You simply can't be at a place that has this many people, maybe, you know, 70, 80,000 people in this little park, a significant number of whom are openly smoking, and there's generally not a single arrest. In other words, for 2 days, the feeling you have that is that if you're at Myrtle Edwards Park in Seattle, Washington, during the Hemp Fest, marijuana is absolutely legal. So it's a terribly empowering experience. Now, it's also a lot of fun. There's great music. There are good speakers. That run into old friends that you haven't seen for several months or for a year or two. But I always leave the Seattle Hemp Fest feeling stronger and more empowered than I have all year. And I think the same thing is true this year.
And Seattle's Hemp Fest, it's really a shining example of how other cities could explore big reform events like this and have some revenue come into their coffers because of it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's become a big event. And one of the things that they've done that's really impressive is the folks that put it on, Vivian McPeak and some others over the years, have really reached out to the local community, including the police department, so that there's no tension at all. I mean, the local politicians and elected officials love the Hemp Fest. It brings, you know, hundreds of thousands of people into Seattle for a couple of days. It is, you know, the world's largest pro-hemp festival, and the city has really embraced it. So it's a wonderful thing to see. I think it's a kind of a demonstration for maybe other regions of the country of options they could consider for their own marijuana policy. Instead of going to war against otherwise law-abiding citizens who happen to smoke a joint, why don't they take a look and see how Seattle deals with it? I think they'll find it's a far better solution. I think it's a model that other communities should really take a serious look at. There are lots of good efforts around the country to legalize marijuana, to move closer to legalization, and at least to legalize medical use. But I'll tell you, if they want to put the time and work into it that these activists in Seattle have put into it, they could do the same thing in lots of other parts of the country. So it really is, I think it's a lesson we can learn a lot from. The only other event that's even close to it is the Boston Freedom Fest, which draws 40 or 50,000 people for one day to the Boston Common. But the difference there is the police in Boston have never accepted it, and as a result, they end up sending undercover officers into the crowd. They end up arresting 40 or 50 peaceful marijuana smokers, which is, you know, just absolutely stupid. You don't have that happening in Seattle.
And Keith, Seattle's a very environmentally conscious city. I'm sure there's a lot of information about hemp and biofuels and the like on display there.
Oh, absolutely. There's all kinds of of green offshoots that have to do with marijuana and hemp here. It's a, you know, it's a very progressive state, and certainly Seattle particularly is a very progressive community on lots of issues. It's certainly not just marijuana, but they have taken a step forward compared to any other community. There's just no place in America, even San Francisco and L.A. and some of the towns we may think about as being pretty marijuana friendly, compared to Seattle, I think they still have some ways to go.
And how has the media been out there? How's the media been at the event?
Oh, yeah, no, there's quite a bit. Rick Steves, you know, who obviously is a member of the Normal Advisory Board, but Rick's an awfully well-known guy, and, of course, this is his home area. He's been speaking several times on the main stage and at the symposium, and every time it's being recorded by different media. Just as I was walking here, because I've got to give a talk here in a few minutes myself at the Sealy stage, I saw Rick being interviewed by another television reporter. He is such a wholesome fellow, and he really is, and, of course, he's the PBS travel guy, that people are generally absolutely blown back when they find out that not only does he smoke marijuana, but he's an incredibly strong advocate for Normal and for legalizing marijuana. So I think right now, I have to tell you, I think he's one of our most effective advocates in the entire country. And so just on Rick alone being the star speaker this year, there's been a lot of media on that. But there was also a lovely article on yesterday in the local Seattle paper that featured Vivian McPeak and gave him credit. He's sort of the father of this thing, and he's been at it a long time, and he's got some serious health problems right now, so I thought it was wonderful to see the local paper give him such a good write-up. I will tell you that I personally saw up close years ago when Rick first agreed to join the Normal Advisory Board and to begin to speak out on this subject. He asked my wife and I to come up and spend a couple of days with he and his family. And as part of that, I literally stated it, met with the key executives in his company, because remember, he's got a multi-billion-dollar company that, you know, they could be at risk if Rick speaks out on a controversial issue. But he wanted me to meet them. He wanted them to understand Normal and be comfortable, and they are. His family is wonderful. At the time, he had two teenage kids. One of them, I think, is now in college, and the other one's just about out of high school. But he's a really middle-class guy, just like he looks like, but he's absolutely right on the marijuana issue. He understands there's nothing wrong with smoking pot, and he doesn't feel like he has to hide the fact that he smokes marijuana.
And Keith, although many see California as really a liberal haven for marijuana, many of the California reformers, they tend to make the trek up there to Hempfest every year.
There's no doubt. I mean, almost every California activist I've ever known is up here. Even, you know, Fred Gardner, the journalist. I mean, people like that. Fred just spoke, and he did a great job. So, I think there's now a recognition that the number one political statement, pro-pot political statement made in America today is made at the Hempfest in mid-August every year.
Right on, Keith. Many thanks again for joining us here today, right from Hempfest here this Sunday.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to talk to you. Now I better be focused because I think I got to go to work.
Righto. Keith Strop is Normal's founder, and he remains legal counsel. We caught up with him right before he went on stage to speak at one of the five stages there at Seattle's Hempfest. Stay tuned. We've got a portion of our July interview with Rick Steves coming up next.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
On Normal's advisory board, he was the keynote speaker at Hempfest this weekend. Rick's appeared a number of times here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, and I've also interviewed him for public radio. First time I interviewed Rick about marijuana law reform, I was very surprised at the passion and articulation that he had in this argument. I'm so used to Rick in his role as the PBS travel host and producer and travels with Rick Steves and his books that it was surprising to me to hear such passion about marijuana law reform. I'd like to share with you a portion of our interview we conducted with Rick right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash in July of this year, just last month. This interview originally appeared on July the 6th, and we have links to the full interview up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us on the Audio Stash today is Normal's Globetrotting Advisory Board member, Rick Steves. Rick has produced his public television series, Rick Steves Europe, has hundreds of episodes airing on public television and cable television throughout the world. He's also the author of over 12 travel guides. He's a syndicated columnist for the Tribune Media Services and writes an op-ed piece for USA Today. Rick's podcasts are also some of the most popular online. We have links to Rick's website and to his podcasts on iTunes on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Rick is passionate about ending marijuana prohibition here in America, and his unique perspective traveling to Europe so frequently is a valuable addition to our discussion about legalization here in the States. And so often here in the U.S., Rick, we hear politicians hide behind this mantra of that message, you know, what message to send to children about marijuana. But Dutch kids and Dutch teens actually have lower rates of marijuana use than in other EU countries.
You know, the whole notion in Europe is that if you make things illegal, then illegal people are selling it on the streets, which makes it much more expensive. It brings in crime, and it also has these unscrupulous characters that see big money in big sales, and their logical, from their point of view, market to target is kids. The Dutch see their policy about marijuana as providing a firewall between young people getting caught up in harder drugs. And this is a very interesting concept that's a little bit beyond the attention span of the average American voter. The idea that if you have marijuana available to people who want to smoke it recreationally in coffee shops, this enables the police to communicate with the part of the community that's likely to take drugs and explain to them the dangers of the harder drugs and what chemical problems are out there lately and so on. It takes the incentive from unscrupulous street dealers away, and the consequence, as you mentioned, Chris, is that use does not go up among young people. And, you know, I don't think it goes down, but it doesn't go up like people are afraid of, and you take the crime out of it, and you're able to deal with the health consequences of what they would call problem cannabis use, and of course you're able to cut back on the popularity of harder drugs in your society.
And Rick, you spend so much time on your travels in Europe with regular families, just regular folks who live there. And it's certainly not like the Netherlands everywhere in Europe, especially most notably in the UK and Ireland, where there's been a lot of reefer madness rhetoric lately. There's a real mixed bag for marijuana in Britain right now.
Well, you know, I've observed this over the last many years because I just see the huge success the Dutch have had and the obvious beauty of not having 80,000 people in jail like we do here in the United States for marijuana charges, you know. And that's just laughable is not quite the right word. It's inconceivable from a European point of view that you would lock up potentially hard-working, tax-paying, decent citizens, parents, you know, employees, whatever. In Europe, they're famous for having zero tolerance for driving and drinking and this sort of thing. You know, they're tackling the problem, which is drug abuse and reckless behavior that can be associated with drug use, recreational drug use. All over Europe, I guess what I'm getting at is with the success the Dutch have had, I'm surprised there's not sort of a snowballing effect around Europe where everybody would embrace the Dutch program. But there's not. And part of that is because there's right-wing groups and there's Christian groups that are really pushing the reefer madness approach and the fear approach about drug policy. And you've got this, I think, really frustrating insistence on the part of the United States that we're going to come down hard economically on people that don't agree with us on drug policy. I've got friends in Denmark that say they're nervous a little bit about the marijuana because they say every year we have to arrest a couple of people on marijuana charges in order to maintain favored trade status with the United States. So you have that injected into this whole thing, and you know, I think for a reason a lot of countries decided to follow us into Iraq. They just figured it would be less costly for them not to buck American policy if we're hell-bent on a certain thing. I mean, we really have a huge impact on people in a lot of ways behind the scenes, and there's a lot of arm-twisting going on. I know my friends in Switzerland who run head shops, what do you call it, paraphernalia shops, you know, in the spring, the ambience is clamping down. It's not so easy in Switzerland anymore. You're not going to get your stuff here. And then in the fall, it's very easy going.
And they tell me in the spring we have to put on a front of, hard on drugs so we don't develop a reputation as being soft on drugs, because that is something that will cause them more problems than what they want to deal with. But that's a pragmatic approach to the external sort of factors there that they have to employ. I've got friends in Spain, which is smokes quite a bit of pot, and they, as parents, they don't want their kids surrounded by a bunch of people smoking pot. Once the kids are paddle up to bed, the recreational, the casual, social marijuana comes out, and it's quite a routine thing in Spain among hardworking parents and professionals that just want to relax with a joint after hours.
And Spain is exceptionally child-friendly and has much more of a cohesive involvement of children into all kinds of activities, I hear.
Oh, well, in Europe, the kids are out on the streets, and it's just the neighborhoods are there, and everybody looks out for every... I don't want to romanticize it, but the population density is higher, and they've been around longer. And, in the United States, if we have a... In my little town here in Washington State, if we have an Oktoberfest... Great, there's going to be beer in our little town, and there's police at the gate of the tent keeping dogs and children out, because you can't have kids watching people drinking beer in public, and you can't have dog hairs in your food. That's so American, and it's so un-European. So I spend a third of my adult life in Europe, and I find it quite relaxing to get over there and find where people can embrace this notion that's so popular in Europe, that you've got to make a choice as a society. You can choose to tolerate alternative lifestyles, or you can choose to build more prisons. It scares me to think that in the United States prisons are being privatized, so there's going to be a profit motive to have more people in jail, and that's just one more huge lie that we can embrace as a society, that we care about people, and then we have people making money when you lock people up.
And Rick, as you point out, we live in a time where civil liberties in America are under attack, or even have already unfortunately been superseded by government. Do you think marijuana prohibition has jeopardized our viewpoint of civil liberties in this country overall?
When I think about the American war on drugs, and when I think about the American war on terrorism, it saddens me that we militarize every struggle we've got. And, I think our society has spent, somebody from LEAP, Law Enforcement Officers Against Prohibition, told me that before drugs were even called illegal, 1.3% of our we had 1.3% of our society addicted to drugs. This is hard drugs. This is not marijuana. And then in 1970 or whenever Nixon declared the war on drugs, we had 1.3% of our society addicted to hard drugs. And now, 30 some years later, and $1 trillion later, and so many hundreds of thousands of lives messed up because of locking them up in jail, we still have that same persistent figure, 1.3% of our society really messed up because of addiction to hard drugs. I mean, it's in Europe they realize, hey, you got 98.7% of the people that don't have this problem. Let's deal this with a little more compassion and a little more understanding, and a little more honesty. In the United States, maybe we don't have the attention span, there's too much fear politics or whatever. But we tend to be conned a lot easier. I mean, the stuff that is said here without any serious discussion would blow a European away. I mean, they can't believe the stuff that our news reports and that our politicians will parrot and so on. That people here, just in the land of the free and the home of the brave, they're neither free nor brave about it. They just accept it because they're afraid to speak out. One reason why I'm so outspoken on marijuana is because it's embarrassing to live in a free society where, a third of the people in this country have smoked it and they're not criminals, to call it a criminal offense. And it's just one of, it's just one lie too many that people are embracing. And I happen to have a job where I can speak out, and it doesn't threaten my livelihood and so on. And I just wish more people would realize that it's not dangerous to speak out. I mean, I go all over the country talking about this. I'm on TV talking about it. I refer to it one of my little goals is to talk about marijuana in every one of my guidebooks. And sometimes it's hard to be in Ireland and talk about marijuana. But I just want to desensitize people to the whole notion of casual, responsible adult use of marijuana. If more people talked about it and if more politicians realized it wasn't political suicide to deal more thoughtfully with drug policy, think of it in terms of harm reduction instead of vote maximizing, they would find that conservative people, they would find that hard-minded, pragmatic people would support a smarter, more European approach to drug problems. But as long as we're shrill and as long as we distill everything down to bumper sticker, you know, sound bites, it's going to be tough to get beyond that. But I had a chance to talk at length about this societal affairs discussions or whatever on TV in Seattle. And the station was all nervous that we were talking about this so straightforward, and we got a mountain of feedback, and everybody across the board, conservatives and liberals, thought what a refreshing thing to have a thoughtful discussion about this persistent issue. Who knows when we're going to realize that there's a better way to deal with the persistent problem of drug abuse and drug misuse than declaring war on something that can't be beaten this way. So it's an important issue, and I'm just really glad that more and more people are talking about it. And I guess the bottom line was, it wasn't political suicide to talk about it. If more politicians knew that, they might be bold enough to actually question the sanity and the effectiveness of our misguided war on drugs. But I still think the average politician thinks that they can be swift-voted when they raise their voice on this, and then the simple tag will be, this guy is soft on drugs. I think he should preempt that and say, I'm not hard on drugs, I'm smart on drugs. I think that makes a lot of sense.
You know, some politicians have come out very strongly supporting medical marijuana, and this legislative season we've seen a few governors strongly against it as well. But in some ways, does medical marijuana make the perfect issue for politicians to hide behind instead of talking about much-needed broader reform?
To me, it's kind of a cop-out. I think there's pragmatic reasons that people do that. But I've, you know, as a board member at Normal, I always weigh in on just the notion that I'm here not because I think cancer people should be able to have marijuana to relieve their symptoms. I mean, obviously they should be able to, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here because I'm not a criminal. I'm here because I'm a good citizen. I smoke pot, and it's one of my civil liberties. You see, I feel very strongly about that. And this year, 800,000 people were locked up, 90% of them on marijuana charges, 90% of them on simple possession. And I don't want to spend billions of dollars a year locking up people like me and my friends for responsible adult use of marijuana. It's flat out misguided. It's stupid. It redirects precious resources in law enforcement away from serious problems. It erodes the credibility of teachers and parents and police, and it's a fiasco. And I'm just surprised that there's not more people with a little celebrity who are courageous enough to say this, because it's just a truth. And so, to me, it's so clear, it's so logical, it's so reasoned. I'm not saying smoke pot. I'm not saying children should be able to smoke pot. I'm not saying smoke pot and drive. I'm saying stop arresting mature adults who want to enjoy a little recreational use of marijuana here in a land where it says, the whole thing is enjoy life and freedom in our country and live well. What's the phrase in the Constitution?
Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, hello, what more patriotic thing can you do but to, stand up and raise your voice for what should be a civil liberty? It's high time that people got together and raised their voices. It'll take a little courage. It'll take a little doing. But, I mean, I can think back to the days in the early 1930s when it must have been very courageous people that stood up and questioned prohibition, because nobody wants to be publicly in favor of booze. But you can be in favor of having a policy that doesn't lock people up for drinking. And treats alcohol smartly, like we do now in our society, where it's not sold to kids, it's taxed, it's regulated. You can't drive with alcohol, and so on. They just knew pragmatically that you're not gonna wish it away. You know, Nancy Reagan can say just say no, but you know it doesn't work that way. And Europe knows that, Canada knows that, and most of America knows that. I wish the politicians would wake up and realize that. There's a chorus out there that's getting louder and louder.
That was our July interview with Rick Steves here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. We're going to have more exclusive Hemp Fest audio for you later in the week as we get it in and process it. We're going to have music, speeches from the stages at Hemp Fest. Oh, it's all going to be here for you on your first source for marijuana law reform information, Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.